Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Horticulture Meets podcast. My name is Sally Drury, and I am technical editor at Horticulture Week. I am delighted today to be talking with two of my all-time heroes, Jeff Webb, CEO of the Grounds Management Association, GMA, formerly known as the Institute of Groundsmanship, and with Derek Walder, operations manager at one of my favourite shows, the GMA's very own Saltex. Hopefully, it hasn't escaped anybody's attention that Horticulture Week is celebrating its 180th anniversary this year. Saltex is celebrating its 75th. So what better time than now to take a look at what is such a major event in the grounds care calendar? Derek, if I could start with you, because you have had a connection with Saltex for a long time. You even have the nickname Mr. Saltex. Tell us a little of the history of the show. When and where did it start?
Hi, Sally. Well, yes, you're right. I've been involved on the sort of management side, operations, for, believe it or not, 39 years. And that's a frightening number for me this morning when I started looking back. The first exhibition was in 1938, which was a year after the National Association of Groundsmen had started. And it stopped during the war years, and then it's progressed then through various venues up until today at the NEC. We've been to Hurlingham, Motspur Park, Windsor Racecourse, Peterborough, back to Windsor Racecourse, and then on to the NEC. So we've got a long history of venues and a long history of exhibitions.
Yeah, I remember Peterborough particularly well. It was a freezing cold wind on the Peterborough showground, wasn't it? And I think the first day, I went round all the exhibitors and then spent the afternoon sheltering inside playground equipment from Australia, and it was like a hut on stilts. And I just wrapped myself up in the corner, pretending I was looking at the comfort that teenagers could get out of this piece of equipment. But yes, it was really cold. My first show was back in 1982 as a reporter on Horticulture Week. Derek, how did you become involved in the show?
I very stupidly went to volunteer in 1970 at Motspur Park as a volunteer in the car park. How on earth I've got to this far, I just don't know. But that's how I started, and I just carried on and carried on with the Institute of Groundsmanship as it was. Got involved more and more in several areas of the Institute, General Secretary, Chairman. I just couldn't stop putting my hand up when they were looking for volunteers. I still enjoy it to this day. The challenges are still there, even more this year. But there's always been a challenge, and it's it's been good to meet the challenge along with the team and the rest of the management in the GMA.
So from car park attendant, Mr. Soltex. What have been some of these big concerns around staging such a big outdoor show?
Well, at Windsor, I just looked back this morning and I was just looking on, in 1980, we had 16,000 visitors and 441 exhibitors. Now, that's rather frightening. we had the whole of Windsor Race Course. We built bridges across tributaries. We had two big entrances. And we were there for 17 days. Now we're down to 5 days. That's one of the big changes. But it was always the weather. Mm-hmm. It was always the weather and the destruction of Windsor Race Course and having to put it back to satisfy the race course authorities afterwards.
I remember some of those very wet events. I think, was it 1983?
Yeah.
The first day was okay. And then the second day we had a thunderstorm and almost flooded. It was terrible.
The only time, Sally, we had to shut down the race court, shut down the exhibition until early afternoon that day to stop anybody coming in with their vehicles.
Yeah. I bet you've got some hilarious stories about Soltex, though, haven't you, Derek? Anything you could share?
There are some, Sally, but I don't know whether this is we've got lots of stories. Most of them good. I was just trying to think of one which is not really funny, but it's happened a lot and it concerned an exhibitor, who of course will not be named, who stormed into the organiser's office threatening mayhem and I'm going to pull out. This thing is run by a bunch of amateurs. You don't know what you're doing. Blah, blah, blah. So I said, well, just hold on. What's the problem? He said, I booked a 10 by 6 and I've only got a 10 by 3. And I looked at him, I said, you're in the wrong area, in the wrong stand. And that was plenty of stories like that. And at the end, to show how this exhibition really works, is that the guy came into the organizer's office on the breakdown day with a couple of bottles of wine and said, hi, give this to the guys. He said, made a bit of a fool of myself, didn't I? Now, I still see that guy up until 2 years ago when he passed away at the NEC and he comes up, he said, always every year to come up, say, can you show me where my stand is, please, Derek? Now, we've got a built up a rapport with the exhibitors over the years, myself, the team and the rest of the staff and management of the GMA. And I think that's been one of our successes. Mm. We are a commercial business in a way, but we're not a big commercial company with shareholders and people who are going to take a profit out of the exhibition.
Jeff, could you explain the thoughts behind this move from outdoors to indoors from September to November? It's been successful, obviously, but what were the reasons for taking what is basically an outdoor industry indoors?
In a nutshell, because the exhibitors told us that's what they wanted.
Right.
We did extensive consultation with it. I remember being told at the time by somebody who had gone through a change of a trade show in that way, that it takes 24 months minimum to do what we did. And we did it in the end in 14 months. So from the perspective of where we had got to back in what was a difficult period, actually, you'll recall we had the Olympics come in and affect the site just before 2012, actually. And I think that was a bit of a watershed moment because it meant that we had to reconfigure the site and it meant moving all the major exhibitors from their normal locations to a different part of the race course. And it probably caused mayhem, actually. But aligned with that, there was an increasing view that the risk of being outdoors across 3 days, also the length, actually, of a 3-day show, which is reflective of the comments Derek said earlier, was just not conducive to doing good business. and we weren't getting the visitor thresholds that we were getting in its heyday. And visitors, as well as exhibitors, were looking at the location. I think, unfortunately, over time, that part of the country, if you're ever on the M25 early in the morning or probably early in the afternoon, is very, very busy space. So we looked at all the options, Sally, and we looked across the country, and we ended up with the decision to go to Birmingham indoors, which took the risk of weather away. And as you say, it has been a year-on-year success. It's actually gone from, I think our last year at Windsor, we got about 6,500 people. And the first year at the NEC, we got 7,500 people. And everybody was obviously waiting to see what happened and what the outcomes were. The final year before pandemic, which has unfortunately closed us down for over 15 months now, we had over 9,000 people attend. And we had, I think, 400 brands represented in 2019. So it was the right move. And yes, it's an outdoor industry, but actually, even things like demos, which I still get picked up, and I see obviously a lot of trade press discussion about this. There were only actually 5 companies in the final year doing any demos at all. And actually, when you analyze it, public weren't actually doing any of the demos themselves. It was sales teams, possibly because of health and safety aspects to things nowadays. So that's quite a limited aspect of the trade show. People really go to network, to sort of engage, to look at the innovation, seek out the new products. And frankly, you can do that as easily indoors as you can outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the romantic side of us, I'll give you a funny story, actually, about the old days at Saltex. I think Derek knows what I'm going to say now. But we did have an off-road driving course, and we were using some John Deere gators, and one of them didn't quite return in the shape and form that it was originally designed for. We won't say who was driving it at the day, but we do know who it was, and he'll be mortified if his name ever gets out. But he did come back rather sheepishly going, "I've broken the axle of the gator." So we had to deal with that one. But also we had some good after parties. I mean, one of my other unsung skills sets is I used to be a DJ. So I did do an impromptu DJ set, which still gets ridiculed by Derek and the team and the rest of the staff to this day. But if you ever need entertainment, I'm up for it if this job ever finishes.
Oh, bear that in mind. Yeah, terrific. Derek, moving the show indoors has obviously changed what you do. Do you get to choose the colour of the carpet?
Harry, that's a very relative point. My CEO has now got a look on his face. Yes, I do get to choose the carpet when the budget allows the carpet to be chosen.
Right.
I do get that choice, much to the chagrin of many of the other people, because sometimes they don't like the colour. Yes, I do. Sorry, I get to choose the carpet.
That's brilliant. That's good. That's fitting. Now, you might know, I'm a little bit of a stickler when it comes to health and safety. For you, Derek, what is the worst aspects when it comes to today's health and safety concerns? And how do you make sure exhibitors and visitors play by the rules?
It's difficult to get exhibitors to return their risk assessment forms back to us because control and demonstration now requires that every exhibitor must have filed their risk assessment and health policy before they're allowed to start building. Our health and safety officer spends his life chasing people coming as they come in to make sure they've got all their forms or fill them on site. If everything is health and safety conscious from the first minute we move in to the last minute we move out, it's a lot easier now than indoors than it would have been outdoors, I think. But it is something that's continually changing. The NEC have their own health and safety rules and regulations, as well as national rules and regulations. So we have to keep on top of it, and it does keep our health and safety officer busy.
Obviously, the last year and a half have been quite difficult with the coronavirus, and no doubt there'll be some people concerned about COVID when they look to attend the NEC this year. What measures do you have in place to improve safety in connection with COVID?
Yes, Danny, this is a very important issue, and it's one that's causing some sleepless nights at the moment, because we have, from the operations side, have got every tool in our toolbox to deal with whatever comes up. We just don't know which tool we're going to want to use at the moment. There'll be sanitising stations everywhere. We don't know whether we've got to wear masks inside or yet or not. The NEC are asking us to pre-register everybody during the build-up and breakdown period. So there's a specific Saltex test and track system going. But we're ready. We've got cleaners ready to move in to do touch points all through. Seminars, chairs, desks, PA equipment, it's all there. We're just waiting now to see what we have to do and what we don't have to do. But we're ready with everything to make the visit safe for exhibitors and visitors.
Yeah, Sally, just to add to that, what Derek said is, you know, we started out, we would have run a Saltex by now in normal circumstances. So we planned for the worst and hope for the best. Is the bottom line of that, and everything that we're doing is working with the NEC, who, as we understand it, the chief exec of the NEC is on a representative group advising government on all these test events that are happening around us as we speak. So I think we're in very good hands with the NEC as a location. One of the advantages to the NEC is the space within it. And we know that we can configure the hall in such a way that we can move people around with minimum of fuss, but maximum integrity of safety of every individual, be that, you know, the people actually on the exhibition stands themselves or the people walking around visiting the show. So from the moment we get there on the Sunday night, we've got all the COVID secure protocols in place happening. So from a contractor's point of view, staff setting up the event through to the 2 days of opening the event and then shutting down thereafter, we're fully up to speed with all the protocols and working flat out with the NEC to ensure that we achieve all of that.
Now, as you both know, I'm a bit of, I suppose you'd say, an anorak when it comes to machinery and all things grounds care. So I'd like to ask Derek, as a former groundsman yourself, what's been the biggest development in grounds care or turf maintenance machinery introduced at the show while you have been Mr. Saltex?
I think, really, when I first started as a groundsman, I used to mark my pitches out with a wheel-to-wheel marker, and we used to mix hydrated lime with water. And now we've got satellite-controlled robotic markers. I think that's been one, and now we've got robotic driven tractors, you just sit there. I think that's been the biggest innovation. And I think that's going to increase along with battery powered machinery. But mixing up lime and water. Terrible job. Now the robotic lime markers, I think, is a good period of development over my time.
Yeah, it's amazing how that liquid would never stay in the bucket while you were mixing it, would it?
Well, one thing, when the lorry drew up in the yard with 2 tonnes of bags of hydrated lime, none of my team were anywhere to be seen.
Jeff, the industry needs young people. I remember back at the shows in the 1980s, there would be coach loads of apprentices from the parks departments arriving at Windsor, finding their way into the industry. Sadly, with the arrival of compulsory competitive tendering, those days are largely over.
We've been through a bit of a phase, I think, where youngsters have pretty much shunned industries like grounds care. How are you going about attracting more youngsters, and what is there for them to see at this year's show?
Okay, well, we've done several things in that regard. The first one, going back to the report I mentioned, Groundsmanship Sports Vital Profession, found that 40% of the industry's workforce is over 50. And one in five grounds managers will be leaving their jobs within the next 5 years. So that in itself is obviously a massive issue that we all need to engage in and tackle. On top of that, we also found in that research that only 1% of the current workforce are female. And furthermore, more than two-thirds of community grounds volunteers are aged over 60. So you've got this ticking time bomb issue that we all need to deal with. And almost all of the volunteers were over 50, by the way. So we've got to modernise, and that's vital to attract a new generation, which is crucial for the future success of the industry. So what have we done was your question. We actually set up what we call the Young IOG Board back in 2007, and that came from a casual conversation over sort of a pre-build for our awards event up in Bolton, where Dave Withers, who was then president of Ransoms Jacobson, in a call with me, immediately backed the idea because they'd been working in golf on the Futures programme for greenkeepers. So the Young Board really came about, and we managed to get a couple of trips across to America where we took some young sports turf ground staff across to see what was happening over stateside. And obviously we worked with Ransoms at that point. But that's grown, and Toro have taken on an active role promoting and supporting a sponsorship package, the Young Board of the IG. But actually we're currently going through a bit of a reboot with that, because like everything, it has its time, and things can lose momentum. And I think we need to have a good look at that at the moment. But really what the sector needs, and it's not just within the GMA, we're one cog in a bigger wheel. It's how generally does the horticultural industry attract young people into the sector, regardless of whether it's a sports turf role or a horticulture role or being a greenkeeper, whatever. And the bottom line is that, unfortunately, pay has been identified as an issue. We've tried to address that through our annual salary reviews that we do, and we've always advised that and encouraged actually the development of individuals, so that if you take a course, for example, to upskill yourself, then that should be rewarded incrementally with some salary increase. And we've also lobbied on what are the existing levels of pay throughout the kind of job postings that you get these days. What we're going to do going forwards is look at anything that we promote through our jobs board. Is we're actually going to say whether the job is above, below, or average to what we consider to be the recommended pay scales. Because I think some of this is attitudinal when it comes to pay, and it's encouraging employers to pay fairly and look after their employees. And as we know, mental health through the pandemic we've just had, but actually was there before this, is an increasing influence on whether people feel happy or not about the roles that they've got and the pressures that they've got. Working hours is another issue. Talk to most people out there, they're doing more hours than their contract is telling them they should do. So there's a whole host of issues to go and attack. But generally, I think there needs to be an overarching strategy for young people within the whole of the horticulture and sports turf sector. And we need to come together. We need to talk to, whether it's the HTA or Bali or whoever, to come up with what are the common issues affecting everybody? Where are the weaknesses in this system? People talk a lot about apprenticeships. I think the problem in the sports turf sector is the volume simply isn't there. And if you look at the agricultural colleges and, if you like, the decimation of the parks departments through CCT over the years has actually impacted, I think, the throughput that agricultural colleges running sports turf courses are able to get as throughputs. So there's simply not enough students registering for courses to enable those courses to be run, to enable the colleges to make them viable. But, you know, clearly colleges such as MySCO are doing a great job as far as, you know, they can with the resources they've got, but they need more backing financially from government. You know, further education has been stripped of budgets, and it's a slog at the moment, and it's not going to change overnight. You know, I think you're talking at least 10 years hard graft to get it anywhere near where you probably need it to be to address the problem.
Goodness, yes. Well, hopefully Soltex can attract, you know, more people into the industry if people go to it and find out what the industry really is about. Staying with you for a minute, Jeff, what's the importance of the show to the organisation and to the industry, and who goes there?
It's a showcase for the industry. It's a wide sector, so it goes actually way beyond sports turf, as you know, Sally, from being a veteran of attending the event. So it's probably about 80% machinery, but then you've got all the different supply facets that come into that, which is a lot of people get confused over the title of Soltex. Derek always reminds me, because probably as I say this, Derek's going to tell me I've got a bit wrong, but it's the sports amenity leisure trade exhibition is what it stands for. I told you I'd get it wrong, and Derek was smiling as I said it, but that in itself gives you the diversity of the show, and obviously there are a lot of different shows available for everybody these days, but I think what we've got is a very good track record of bringing in the buyers to the exhibitors. And I think we would stand by that track record over the years, which is why it's got the history it's got. It's always been an attractive show for the marketplace. And more recently, it's moved from, as you know, an outdoor event to an indoor event, which, you know, we had to work hard at that. But it's paid off in dividends by the growth that it had in the 5 years up until the pandemic hit us.
Of course, yes. That's great. I'm really looking forward to it. Which reminds me, when exactly is Soltex this year?
So it's the 3rd and 4th of November this year.
Well, thank you both. I've been talking with Jeff Webb and Derek Walder about Soltex and the GMA. My name's Sally Drury. Make sure you catch the next episode by subscribing to Horticulture Week podcasts via Apple, iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.